you could tell the story of your whole life in food. From the taste of home to that first trip on the wild side of the flavor palette. Maybe in a big city.
So it's back in the early 2000s where you could hop on a flight to New York City for $88 round trip.
This is writer Amy Nezuko Mutatil, author of the new memoir, Bite by Bite.
I was single. I had my first job. Most of my friends were in New York City. Most of my friends at the time were living in kind of cramped apartments, so restaurants would host us. Restaurants would actually have fruit on hand, and Miracle Fruit is a great little jelly bean-sized fruit, and if you eat one, everything you eat afterwards tastes sweet. So if you eat a saltine cracker after you've had a Miracle Fruit, you would never know it's saltine. It would taste like a graham cracker. If you eat a lemon, you would swear that you were eating an orange.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it would be flavor tripping. That's what they call them. They were kind of this niche outing that you could do. And restaurants serve up either kind of sour or spicy foods. It was more of like a light buffet. But the grand finale was a Guinness. Hmm. The gist of it is you have a Miracle Fruit, take a drink of Guinness, and it tastes like a chocolate milkshake. You would have to be convinced that that was your drinking beer. So it's a wild, deliriously, exquisitely ebullient night. What is going on in my mouth? And it was all from fruit. It was all from fruit.
So I wanted to talk with Amy because her new memoir is all about food and memory. She began it during the pandemic, when cooking was a way of staying connected to the family she couldn't see. Parents in Florida, grandparents in India and the Philippines. And I think family recipes became more precious to a lot of us during lockdown. When I told Amy that I have some old recipe cards handwritten by my great-grandmother, a woman I never even met, she knew right away what that meant.
Oh my gosh, do you have them in a safe place?
I do, yes.
Good.
Yes, they're some of the first things that get taken out in the event of a fire.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask, your father's from India and your mother's from the Philippines.
That's right.
How did the foods of those geographies affect the way you grew up, the way you cook?
Well, it's interesting because, first of all, I love both cuisines. What a lucky upbringing, right? Mm-hmm. In some ways. Oh my gosh, the fact that I had lumpia and various curries really without ever having to leave the house from such a young age, it just seems like magic and so much care and love wrapped up in that. But I also think too, it's slightly different, my story, because we were the nuclear family. My mom came here, none of her relatives were here. Same thing with my father, they had each other. You know, both of them come from tropical areas, India and the Philippines, and they met in Chicago. And I have to wonder how it kind of breaks my heart a little bit to think of these two immigrants from such tropical, hot countries trying to make food that they remember in the middle of a blizzard mm-hmm. for their American children. They definitely made it a point that we grew up knowing their food from their various countries. But at the same time, I also know how hard won that was.
And growing food was a big part of your family. Also, your parents always had a garden, it seems like.
Absolutely. It was almost considered wasteful. You have a yard and you're not doing something with it. You're not helping grow fruits and vegetables that you can share with neighbors, you know, that kind of thing.
You write that their love language is their garden. And
that's right.
In particular, you write so beautifully about mangoes. And yes. They have this wonderful kind of back and forth about whose mangoes are best,
yes.
The Filipino mangoes or the Indian mangoes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the only kind of squabble they have in the garden is like, no, the Philippine mangoes are the best. Everything else, they wish they could be better than the Philippine mangoes, you know?
How different do they taste?
You know, I didn't even really fully understand how many varieties of mangoes there are. So there's some that have a hint of almost cherry to it. There's some that are really thready and, you know, they have a lot of fibers. It's kind of a pain in the behind to eat. Then there's others that just, it almost like falls off your spoon as you scoop it up. So different levels of tartness, different levels of sweetness.
I guess I was wondering, reading your book, how much it's changed to be writing about foods that you grew up with as the child of immigrants. There's a story you tell at the very beginning of the book about you were in grad school and you wrote a poem about mangoes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, rather than me telling your story, I'll just ask you, what happened?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, boy, that's exhibit A of like how far we've come with food discourse, how we treat difference or anything. I mean, the gist of it is I took graduate courses in creative writing, and there's one class period we spent the entire, you know, kind of half hour all just debating whether or not I should put the word mango, which I used in a poem, in italics or a footnote, because it was too so-called, and I'm using air quotes here, too foreign or too exotic.
Wow.
And people may not know what it is, so you might need to explain a mango with a definition or something. And
my God, I like, just, do you need to footnote mango?
I know, exactly. Where I grew up, even in Chicago or Iowa, my parents found ways to find mangoes somehow. It did not seem exotic or weird or bizarre. It was weird and bizarre that other people did not have mangoes. But I can't say that in a class full of white folks who were all telling me how foreign and strange this fruit was.
I mean, it's funny now, but it sounds really painful.
Yeah, I'm absolutely laughing and smiling recalling this time. But at the time, it was like, wow, can we give me commentary on the content of the poem? What else can I do with the poem? I wanted feedback, you know, I wanted helpful feedback.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And don't you also think, in this one area, we got it right.
Yes.
Food and cooking, embracing diversity. And this just makes everything richer and more fun and more joyous. And so if we get that in the world of food and cooking, maybe we can manage it in other arenas also.
I know, right? That's exactly it, Anne. Oh, my goodness.
I'm curious, is the mango poem in your book, is that the one you wrote in that class?
It is not.
Can I ask you to read it anyway? Did you have your book with you?
I do. Let me see.
Okay.
All right. This is called The Origin of the Mango. Of course, my parents can't agree. My father says one of its flat, stringy seeds floated all the way from India and just happened to land on the Philippine shoreline. Anything good comes from India, according to my father. Swirls of calligraphy, the darkest, purest gold hammered into rings and loopy bangles, paprika, and web-thin silks that send hundreds of pirates in a frenzied search to the east. But mangoes? My mother doesn't buy it. She says the queen fruit of her beloved islands came from a tree growing in the spot where a Filipina named Malanga pierced her heart through with a knife. The girl's parents wanted her to marry someone she did not love, a regular Juliet. The tree grows bold and thick in the swell of winter, pushes out a dozen heart-shaped fruits so we won't forget. I think of my parents. Their hands slip into mangoes with a knife blade. Fingers fly lightly over the skins. Different countries, same blood, hungry for this fruit. Its flesh, like cold sweetmeat, fibers spun gold, sweet pulp in the teeth. The fight over the seed, and who gets to suck each sugary fiber from the pit. It only curls their wet hands together even more. Only gets more gold juice, the right story.
I love that. I love that, the way you bring the story and the juice and the mango all together at the end. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
So your earlier book was about wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem to me that your writing in this book is also so much about wonder. But in this case, it's the wonder of exploring the world with our mouths and tongues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just wondering what you'd say about the way wonder and taste come together in how we apprehend the world?
Oh, I love that question. It's so expansive. And gosh, that sounds like almost an essay prompt for a whole nother essay, that, you know, an extra coda to the book. But I guess I would just say that to tackle that question, it would have to be remembering that memory is so tied up with smells, and smell is therefore tied up with taste more than any other sense, biologically. And I'm not a scientist, so scientists couldn't weigh in. But the place in our brains that processes memory is also coincidentally the same place that processes smell. And so I think there's something about smell and food that brings us together, because we want to share our memories. Oh, that reminds me of my grandmother. That reminds me of my first kiss. That reminds me of a not great date. Whatever it is, it conjures up memories just when we least expect it, more than any other sense. So I think there's definitely something about the sharing of food and food moments with each other that makes us feel not so alone. We can't help but want to share these stories with other people too. So yeah, I love that question. But in a big nutshell, that's what I would go for.
Well, that's interesting, because I think of wonder. It's such a hard sensation to, it almost feels wrong to try to define it in a way, because wonder to me is all about expansiveness, about making whatever experience you're having right now in the moment bigger. And that's what you just described with food or with scent, the way you can be standing right here. I don't know, I can take a carton of raspberries out of the refrigerator, and even though, okay, they're refrigerated raspberries that were picked 10 days ago somewhere, you know, far away from me, nevertheless, I can stand there and smell them and be transported back to my grandparents' berry patch in Springfield, Missouri, standing on a summer vacation, picking berries straight into my morning cereal bowl.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Tasting that warmth of the sun. I mean, nothing I can buy in the store or that comes in plastic is ever going to taste remotely like that, but I can get just a little tiny hit of it. And so for that moment, I'm in two places and the world is so much bigger.
Absolutely. I love that. Even in your sharing of that story, you know, I'm here in a hotel room in Minnesota, and suddenly I'm in that field with you, and I can almost taste the sun-ripened berry on a tongue. And that's what I love about food writing. That's what I love about sharing food stories, is that no matter where you are, if you are descriptive enough, if you are specific enough, you can bring along a friend for the whole journey and never lose them. You get this trust, and it becomes interactive. It becomes reciprocal. It's not just me lecturing you, you know, as a professor. It's me taking your hand or nudging you along to say, come with me, come with me.
Thank you for talking. That's been lovely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Amy Nezhukumatathil is the author of 4 books of poetry, a collection of nature essays called World of Wonders, and a new memoir, Bite by Bite.